B-Pod Studios.
Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
So sporty.
Oh, yeah?
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah?
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah?
Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah? 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the Boo Birds, who have tried to restrain themselves throughout the course of what's been a frustrating season for a lot of people, even with everything the Celtics have done over the last couple of months. You know, Boston goes 25-9, but no one's paying any attention to that. The Celtics now are back in fifth in the Eastern Conference, but more importantly, they have surrendered back-to-back huge leads at home to the Lakers and the Clippers. And the L.A. Clippers, three times on this road trip, have come from 20-plus down to win. It's the biggest lead the Celtics have surrendered in 16 years. The final score, L.A. 123, Boston 112.
Hour 2, Felger Mazz here on a reentry Monday. That was grim. That was grim, and it leads to Mazz's Rodenheiser hot take.
Yep, and last week's Rodenheiser hot take is brought to you by Rodenheiser in celebration of his sixth World Series title, or world title, rather. Rodenheiser Plumbing, AC and Electric is offering Sports Hub listeners a special offer. Listen to this. You get a house repair done right now, you mention me, Mazz, you get $98.50 off any service. 98.5.
Get it?
Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric, proud sponsors of the Patriots. Here's my point from last week. That Laker game was not just a blip. It was a foreshadowing of what came against the Clippers on Saturday night, because that was a disaster.
This is a rare Rodenheiser take that was right. You were right. I did. I brushed off that Lakers thing as they chucked the ball out of their tuchus and, you know, hit a bunch of threes and lucky bounces and all of that. And then it got worse the next night. It was foreshadowing.
I mean, just this is where they are. And again, this is akin in some ways to that stretch the Celtics had in January. Remember when they lost three in a row there, they looked like they were turning a corner and then all of a sudden they backslid. And this team, every time they start to get a little comfortable, they backslide. And it's the same thing now. There's got to be some shakeup in there. The mix isn't working right.
Okay, and I give Gary Washburn again credit there. In the Globe, he does a good job. When things go bad, he's not afraid to call the team out. He's there every day, so he's got to face them. So he does a good job with this. Washburn wrote in the Sunday Globe, let's say this first, this was the most embarrassing regular season loss of the Brad Stevens era. Do you agree?
Yes. I mean, again, off the top of my head, it's hard to find one worse.
Yeah, I guess in terms of the way that they blew it, but I think you could point at like five games this year that are incredibly embarrassing. That loss to the Knicks at home before Thanksgiving, that's still up there for me.
Phoenix, that's another one, but blow a 28-point
Orlando games.
There's quite a few here on the list. He writes that the Celtics were pathetic against the Clippers. The fans began booing once the Clippers got within 10, and the fans never stopped.
That was awesome.
Good job, Green Teamers. Good job.
It's about time.
Finally, some accountability there. Excellent. Washburn writes that mentally strong teams don't lose 28-point leads 2 days after losing an 18-point lead. He said Saturday, unlike the Lakers game, that you know the Lakers did get hot. He says Saturday had nothing to do with the opponent. The Celtics wilted under the pressure of keeping a big lead because they expected the Clippers to fold, and they didn't. The front runners. That's what he's calling the Celtics. The front runners made two first punches, staggered their opponent, and then ran into the corner when the opponent responded. He says the Celtics aren't scaring anybody. They have the talent to make a long playoff run, but not the fortitude. They don't have the fortitude to make a long run. He says it was ridiculous. The Celtics forgot all their defensive principles. They were scared. They knew they could be caught, and once the Clippers started making baskets, they tensed up and refused to respond to the challenge. Talked about hero ball. So I was in and out of this game. I didn't see this sequence. Marcus Smart, who after missing his past 6 3-pointer over 2 games, decided to launch a pull-up three with the Celtics down 2 with 2:06 left. Remember this?
Oh, yeah.
He missed. The Clippers raced the ball up the floor, and Smart tried to draw a charge against Montrezl Harrell, pronounce that name, but left his man Beverly in the corner for an open three. Swish. Ball game. And then he points to a Stevens comment in the postgame that was really, you felt, was calling out his own team. Where Stevens here is talking about the Clippers, okay? He's talking about the Clippers when he says they played very together. They played off of actions. They played very free after that first quarter. And to their credit, they found great enthusiasm together. This whole year, they've played with such great teamness, resolve. You don't come back from 20-point deficits if you don't really like each other and really pull for each other. I think those guys show that night after night.
So I'm torn with this because on the one hand, I like it because he's at least being transparent, but he's only seemingly doing it with the media. Is he telling the guys this? And I thought about this as they were puking this away on Saturday. I didn't like something he said after the loss to the Lakers the other night, where he's saying it was up to the basketball gods and the right team won that night. That's like passive-aggressive nonsense. Are you talking to your team, or are you just taking shots via the media? Because it feels like the latter. It feels like he's not talking to these guys at all about these kind of issues. And he's kind of skating a bit here. Like, you have to now factor him in with the way that this team has played this year and the fact that this is just a bad room and they seemingly don't like each other. And I think he's part of the problem.
See,
it's
I think
he's taking shots through the media. Are you talking to your team?
I'd be willing to bet he is, Murray. But what I think he's not doing is he's not acting on it. So, in other words, it's one thing to say it, but when a guy isn't doing what you want him to do, is there a penalty? A guy's playing 20 minutes every night? It feels to me like everybody's took his 20 minutes every night. Whether it's Rozier, it's Brown, it's Hayward, they all get 20 minutes. And, you know, the other thing, too, is Marcus Morris has not played well for a while now, right? I mean, it's been, what, a month? Morris has cooled off. Get his ass out of the starting lineup. Switch that one back. I don't know who you put in there. But again, this is one of the things that you're not playing well, and you cited the defensive lapses against the Clippers where he didn't get his ass back on D. Sit your ass down. You're out of the starting lineup. I'm going to someone else. And I'm not sure who that is. Maybe it is Brown. Whatever. But there's got to be a consequence for bad play.
Yeah, it feels like there's no accountability whatsoever, and that starts with Stevens. And then you get chirping from him and players, obviously, to the media after bad losses, and everyone just goes their separate ways. And that we'll figure it out another time. That's what it feels like.
Okay, how much blame does Bush deserve? Is there anything what should he do? What can he do? In that league, it's hard. It's hard. Mike and Peabody, your thoughts?
Oh, my God. It's exactly, Murray, exactly what I wanted to say. But they're a microcosm of exactly how their coach acts. He calls them out. He even said, I think, something along the lines of, I'm glad that we lost against the Lakers, which was scary and startling. But he needs to look at himself in the mirror. And he did mention something to me the other night in the post game. I think it might have been after the Pelicans game where he has to, you know, do a better job. No kidding, you got to do a better job. He lacks the grapefruits that it takes to be a leader. He should sit these guys down and tell them opt in or opt out. And that's that.
Okay. It's not really coaching. It's ego management. It's that whole piece that we always talk about in the NBA, that's the real key to these coaches who have these superstar teams. Less and less about coaching, and it's more and more about managing personalities and egos.
I mean, I think the caller's pretty much got it. Now, the one thing I will say is, you know, the caller says definitively he doesn't have the balls. Maybe not yet. Like, I think he can learn it. Okay? Because I think Stevens is good. The strategy, clearly, he's good. But he's dealing with stuff he's never had to deal with before. They all think they're superstars. Now what? Someone's got to put them in their place and tell them, no, there's a pecking order. We have five in front and then people after that. Which one of you? That's got to be the coach.
We continue. Dave in Springfield. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Hey, Maz, you just said it. Marcus Morris, that's the guy. They don't have a leadership problem. That's the guy. You know how many playoff games he's been in 8 years prior to joining the Celtics? How many games he's played in playoffs?
I don't.
Four.
Yeah.
Since he's been here, 19. That he's been as bad as anybody else. They just gave up 129 points to L.A. and then 123 to the Clippers.
Good point.
And then he's as bad as anybody defensively. And then that's the guy that's run his mouth in the locker room. There's your problem.
David, thanks for the call. Again, I encourage you to go read or subscribe to the Boston Sports Journal. Brian Robb did a good job pointing out that Marcus Morris was as bad as anyone defensively. And he gave you clips that showed it, that he wasn't getting – on Saturday night, before he decides to call out everybody else, that he's the one, or was one of the ones, that wasn't getting back. He was one of the ones that was dogging it in the transition D, which was the biggest problem. And they gave up. They gave up.
They really did, yeah.
They quit. I mean, they flat out quit. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Who's that big guy for the Clippers? Zubats?
You can't name any of them. They just cobbled this team together in the last couple of weeks.
Avika Zubak.
They quit. They flat out quit.
They got beat by that guy.
And Morris was one of them. And then he comes out in the post game and rips the team. Huh. Steve in Taunton. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, good afternoon, boys. Hey, you guys can say what you want. The players play the game or, you know, they got to do most of the work there. It's got to be Stevens. I'm sorry. I'm not a big Brad Stevens, you know, I don't knock him down, but he has to take responsibility for this. During that game on Saturday, those guys were out of control. Not once did he call a timeout. Not once.
Well, that's not true.
He did not, Mike. They were chucking up balls all over the place. Nobody did anything to stop that bleeding. He is the coach. He coaches like he does in college. He has yet to pick up that NBA standard.
Okay, so those other things are right. Don't tell me they gave away a 28-point lead or called a timeout in the middle of the 28-point giveaway. Like, again, I didn't watch the whole thing, but that doesn't seem plausible to me. But that other piece about coaching an NBA superstar team, we said it going into the year, and people look at me like I had three heads, but he had not established himself on that level, and he still hasn't. He still hasn't. You give him a bunch of younger pieces that have to prove themselves, you know, then he can turn it, get a hustling group that'll be greater than the sum of its parts. We've seen that for the last 4 years. He's done that every year. Now he's got a team with some real talent and real expectations, and it's gone the other way. So if he's getting credit for that other thing, he's got to get some blame for this thing.
Absolutely. Look, there's a culture problem in that locker room. I don't know how else you'd describe it. There's a culture problem on it. It's not a talent problem.
Definitely not.
It's not a strategic coaching problem. Steven's a good coach, X's and O's. We know that. That's established. There's a chemistry or culture problem. Define it however you want, but it's not working.
Okay, we got some thoughts on the Bruins coming up as well as the new football league, as well as the Celtics all day long, because they certainly are lead story. But it's a re-entry Monday, and we'll get back to your thoughts with some Bruins thoughts right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You're listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha he he.
Oh, love it.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Marchand, who has 13 overtime winners in his career. Marchand, high slot to Bergeron. Far point now, Marchand, high slot. Feeds it down low, let's go!
All right, Bruins, back-to-back overtime wins over the weekend. Do you know, Maz, they've gone seven straight without a loss?
I know. They're 4-0-3. When I read that today, I said, you got to be kidding me.
I mean, when I say a loss, a regulation loss.
Right. Because it doesn't feel that way. With all the blown leads and everything else, it doesn't feel like they've gone seven games without a regulation loss. It's 11 points in seven games. I mean, it's like a 120-point pace.
It felt like they've gotten hot. I don't feel like they've gotten hot. When I've watched, I thought yesterday was kind of a sucky game up and down the ice.
Yeah, but at least Halak wasn't garbage.
No, they finally won in front of Halak. It'd been a while since they'd done that. The game before was a really fun game against LA, but they gave away another two-goal lead in the third, got too loose. So I don't feel like they've played great, but they've gone seven straight without a regulation loss. Do you know that they have the seventh best record in the league? It's hard to look at it that way because they've been in this wild card spot the whole season. Now I think they're just in third versus the wild card spot, but they're, you know, they've been going back and forth with Montreal, a point here, a point there from the wild card spot. So they've been in third or fourth, call it, in their division the entire season. So you're like, meh. But it turns out they have the best division in hockey.
Yeah, they do.
You know, for most of the year, they would have been leading the Metropolitan Division. I think they would have been like 2 points out of the Metropolitan lead if they were in the Metropolitan, something like that. It's just that their division's so good that they've been a third, fourth place team, but they're the seventh best record in the league. And record-wise, neck and neck with any team that's anywhere outside of their division. So is it time to start looking at them as a team that should do something? You know, I said before, I don't think defense is a need. Third in goals against in the league. That's pretty good, given the fact that Chara was out for that amount of time. And you know, just a couple of years ago, you looked at the defense coin and said, ugh, there's nothing there. Chara was out for a chunk. McAvoy's been there only half the time. And it took Rask, as usual, all this time to get going. He finally did. Then Halak sort of hit the crapper, but they're still third in the league in goals against. Like, that's good.
And they were missing their best defensive forward at that time, too.
And Bergeron was out for plenty of time. So they've turned into a power play team. They're third in the league in power play goals.
They're like the old Canadians.
It's that first line, and when you get on the power play, it's that first line, and that's how they score. 5-on-5 goals. You know where they rank?
I'm going to say 23rd.
27th.
Oh, my gosh.
In 5-on-5 goals for, they're 27th in the league. So that's usually a bad sign playoff-wise because there's more 5-on-5 play in the playoffs than there is the postseason. It's less reliant on special teams. Well, that may be changing the last couple of years. All I know is, so this is what points to my thing about the trade deadline, which is they lost the third line from last year when Riley Nash went out the door. And Riley Nash has gone on to suck. I can't remember. Where'd he go? I can't remember where he went.
Was it Carolina?
I can't. I think, didn't he come from Carolina? Wherever he went and sucked. He hasn't, last I checked, wasn't having a good year. So it's not like keeping him would have made a difference either. He had a contract year. So fine, let Riley Nash go.
But Columbus.
When they let him go, thank you. When they let him go, they said, well, we'll try Forsbacher Carlson. We'll try, you know, whatever. We'll try some of these kids and see if any of these kids could. And they never did. They didn't in the first week. They didn't in the first month. They didn't in the second month. They haven't now. And now it's midway through February and they have no third line. Changes every other night. Nothing is stuck. Nothing's working. And as we talk about the Bruins at the deadline, this to me is the easy one. This to me is the easy one. And it should have been done a while ago. Get your scouts out there to find me the next Riley Nash or the next Chris Kelly. They're floating around. They're out there. Okay, I don't know who they are because I don't keep track of the third, fourth lines on every team. I just don't. So don't ask me, but the hockey people should know. You should be able to go get that piece. And the fact that they haven't yet, that's starting to bug me. Because that's been a need from day one. And now we're 2 weeks from today until the trade deadline. And you've gone in the crapper 5-on-5, and that's a big reason why. That's a big reason why, right? Because the first line produces. And the fourth line's been good with Achari, Wagner, and Corrali. And you know, even David Krejci's had a good year.
No, I think Krejci's played, I was just about to say that, Krejci's played a lot better.
You know, Krejci's actually had all things considered a good year. DeBrusk took a step back, like a lot of young guys took a step back, and they've never had anything on that second line next to him on the right side. But that, to me, is, that's the hard one. That's the hard one, because that's a big name, that's a big price, and that's, I'm sort of done with these deadline rental deals for the Rick Nashes of the world, as I've said last week, and the Jaromir Jagrs of the world. Like, I'm sort of sick of those. But the third line pieces, like, come on. You should be able to figure that out. And that's sort of my take for the day. Like, let's at least do that. Let's start with that. And you should do that yesterday. You should do that yesterday. But the Panarins and those pieces, I don't blame them. Even though, Cassidy, you got to love this guy.
I'll tell you what, I saw this over the weekend. I said, holy crap, I can't believe he said that.
So this happened on Friday, and because I'm still analog, I wait for it to be in the paper. We never aired it on Friday because if it happens that day, I need to read it in the paper overnight with my glass of lemonade on the porch, Murray. Okay.
In a rocking chair?
News ain't the news until it's tactile and I can hold it.
Your porch swing?
No, that's right. So, like, if it happens that day, I kind of ignore it until I read it in the paper and then the next day. So, we didn't do this on Friday because I'm analog. Cassie said this on Friday. Go ahead.
I don't talk to the players about the trade deadline. I think they're all aware of what's going on. We just try to deal every day with, you know, the lineup we have, how can we get better? Do we move pieces around? That's it. I try to stay in the moment, no different than any other day. Of course, when I go home tonight, I'm thinking, I wonder if we'll trade for Panarin tonight, you know? You know, I'm human. But that's it, right? And then it's gone. Then I'm cooking burgers or something at home, or fish, you know? So I don't concern myself with it a whole lot.
Or fish, eh? You're not allowed to do that.
I can't believe he named
He also
him.
Did this.
If a better player came along that fits there and from another organization, hey, I'll be happy if he makes their team better. Absolutely. Panarin would play right wing, not center, though.
I don't think you can do that.
It's unbelievable. And I think he went on to, like, clarify that.
Apparently, you know, we don't have it, but there was a quote later on the presser that said, look, I'm not looking to tamper or do anything, so don't.
Right, I'm using him as an example.
Yeah, don't burn me on that. And we don't mean to burn you on that, Bruce, but it's just funny.
But we just burned you
on it. You're not allowed to do that.
No, you can't name anybody on another roster like that.
Panarin would play right wing, not center.
It's unbelievable.
He's already got him penciled in the lineup.
I saw that. I went, holy crap, he actually named the guy. Like, and again, then when I read on, I said, okay, fine, you know, I get it. He just said, you know, I'm not seeing him specifically. I'm using him as an example. And I went, all right, he clarified it. But still, you never see guys do that anymore. They're terrified in someone like that.
Not him. He's no filter Bruce. He'll name names. He'll call out Chara. He'll call out the goalies.
Oh, he's the best.
Tell you what, I love him. I do. I love him. I don't know how long it'll last because at some point someone's going to say, would you shut up already?
Well, or like, he's going to get fined for that one.
Exactly.
I mean, Ainge won't talk about his own pending free agents. I tell you, Crowbar, he's going to say, I'm engaged to the guy, not married. Like, I mean, in any other league, I can't talk about other players.
I'll tell you what, though.
Bruce has got him on the right wing.
He's dead on that when you're out there flipping the burger, you're like, huh, I wonder if we can get this guy on the show.
No, I believe he's got him at center.
Panarin would play right wing, not center.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, right wing. He had him at the right wing. Oh, it's great. But so that one, and again, we went over the price for that late last week. A first-round pick. A prospect, which means a recent first-round pick. You know, Fluto had mentioned Trent Frederick, who you drafted in the first round just 2-3 years ago, which I consider like a second first-round pick. So a first-round pick, a prospect that's drafted up there, and then a third piece that can't be chopped liver for a month-and-a-half rental for a Russian who scares me, who wants to play in New York, L.A., because he wants the wild and crazy guy. He's like that guy. He wants to go to the big lights and party down. Like, that would scare... I don't blame him for passing on that. I don't want to do that.
No. I mean, it's... Look.
But...
I'm not giving up that for a rental.
Especially
for a man who wants to party in New York.
He does. Like, that's his M.O. He wants to go somewhere big and die.
Tough to find nightclub in Columbus, Ohio. Girls not pretty. Cocaine stepped on.
But this place called Studio 54.
But the next Riley Nash, the next Chris Kelly, the next Rich Peverly, the next... Like, can we do that? Can we do that?
I mean, those should be doable deals. Again, Kelly was a, you know, at the time, nobody
knew. Third-round pick. I can't remember what it was you gave up, but come on.
No, a deal like that should be doable.
All right, so back to your thoughts on this. Here's Mike in Boston on the Bruins. Go ahead, Mike.
Mike, here's what the problem is. The problem is in 2015, we know who the Bruins drafted. And when Don Sweeney got up on stage, he could have just pulled out his phone when he couldn't get to Hanifin and was confused as to who to draft. And he could have had Kyle Connor. He could have had Matt Barzell.
We know this, Mike. There's like 20 players they could have had that would have been better than what they ended up with. It's ridiculous. But what's your point today?
My point is that was your future right there. They're not going to get past Tampa, Toronto, Washington, or Pittsburgh in the playoffs.
So that's the draft that did them in. Maybe. We might look. When you look at the players drafted, never mind before those guys, but after, and we did this a couple weeks ago. It is like there are a half dozen to a dozen legit, if not NHL all-stars, right kind of there. I mean, it's stupid how good that draft was. And you ended up with one guy we think who can play, Jake DeBrusk, so far.
Right, and even he is, you know.
Backslid this year.
Right, at best, I would say. I like DeBrusk, but, you know, at best, he's what? Second-line player?
Right. But that's a story for another day, believe me, and we'll do it. The immediate issue is how much to invest in this team, and I say that there's some relatively easy things they can and should do. You want to hold off on that big deadline piece that's going to cost you first-round picks and whatnot. That's a different story. Can you go in and get someone who can play on the third line already? It's been that way from day one. Nick in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, Mike. So I want to quickly touch on both of those things you're talking about. So third-line center, I mean, this just happened probably about an hour ago. The Kings traded Nate Thompson,
yep.
Like third, fourth-line center perennially. I mean, he's old, but... It was only for a fourth-round pick, and they sent a fifth-round pick back to Montreal.
Okay,
so it's cheap.
Just what I'm talking about. Exactly.
And to get back just quickly here before you hang up, I know Ottawa has been in the dumps, and that goes without saying. They're probably last place in the league. You have a surplus on defense to where you're struggling to get a guy like John Moore into your lineup, who you just signed this offseason for a handful of years and some nice change. Why don't you actually bite the bullet and get one of these top four guys out of here and actually go and get someone like Mark Stone, because Ottawa wants to pay the money to Matt Duchene, it seems like, who's going to bring in about 10 mil.
Okay, so I like Stone. What? Who are you talking about in the top four? Does Krug qualify?
I would say Torrey Krug, because you have a type like him and Matt Grizzlick. I mean, he's lesser, obviously, than Krug, but, I mean, he's less of a liability, I'd say, on defense, and I don't know, he's got some more years to grow.
Okay, so I'll put that into the trade machine, talk to a hockey guy. I don't know, does Krug straight up for Mark Stone work?
I mean, does Ottawa want Krug?
That's a question. They have again, one of the guys taken right after the fearsome threesome there by the Bruins 2015 was Shabbat, this great young defenseman
right.
in Ottawa who was leading the league in defenseman scoring there for a while. I don't know where he is now. I don't know what their need is for a guy like Torrey Krug.
I mean, they literally have the worst record in the league.
$7.3 million a year for Stone. I didn't realize he was that much. How many years does he have left, Jimmy?
Let me see.
And is he a right shot or a left shot? Not that it matters.
It feels to me like he's been good in the playoffs, too.
Right shot.
Right shot. Put him on the right side of Krejci. We should ask Bruce where he'd pencil him in. He'd give that right up. I don't mean to burn you, coach, but wow. Okay. Yeah,
where would you put Stone?
We've got your Bruins thoughts, your Celtics thoughts, and...
Stone would be a rental, by the way.
He's up at the end of the year.
Yes, sir.
So he is a right shot.
So you know what? I still give up Krug for that, by the way, because I don't know. You're going to need that money to sign Carlo, to sign McAvoy, to sign these guys coming up. I don't know. Would I give up Krug for a rental? Maybe I'm going to take that back immediately. I don't know. I got to think about that. Stone is up at the end of the year. How old is he, Jimmy?
26-ish.
So I say this again. If you're Ottawa and you're the worst team in the league, why do you want Torrey Krug? Is he going to overhaul your D?
No, but is he $4-plus million a year?
I think he's $5-something. I'll check it, but I'm thinking, like, what the hell would you want
Torrey
that guy
Krug,
for?
5.25 this year and next year.
Okay, so I don't know, right? Torrey Krug might be a piece for a Stanley Cup team. You put him on your power play.
Bingo!
There you go. He's like that sort of thing. But he's not even a rental.
Ottawa? The worst team in the league. Yeah, we're going to rebuild our D around Krug, Felger. Let's give him to Ottawa.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Meanwhile, new Spring Football League debuted over the weekend. The AAF, the Alliance of American Football, is that what it's called?
That's what it is.
And someone who is, really loves bad football... Big Jim Murray gravitates towards him immediately. You liked it, huh?
I did. Yeah, I didn't expect to at all, considering the level of play that was mostly displayed. But there are some fringe NFL guys. You get Trent Richardson in there. Christian Hackenberg, right? That kid tries to make it again, and he ended up being a disaster. But I don't know. The quality of it was good in terms of the broadcast quality. I was into that because, you have CBS taking care of it, so it looks like real football. I didn't expect to hang out and watch a game for more than 5 minutes, and then about 45 minutes in, while I'm watching it in conjunction with the Celtics on Saturday night, I was like, I think I like this. It's not that bad.
I watched it last night. The NFL Network aired a game. I watched it.
How was it?
That Arizona team's not that bad.
It was on, yeah. They had some nice scoring plays, a couple deep posts that they hit. I actually watched it.
So I haven't seen it yet.
I actually watched it. So there's things I like, there's things I don't like. I do not like the no kickoffs and no extra points. People are saying this is a positive development. I don't know. Even if it's just going through the motions, I want to see you kick the ball off. Because I feel like, I don't know. And I want to see a lineup for the extra point. Now, it doesn't have to be the gimme extra point. I like the 33-yard extra point. If you want to screw around with the extra point, that's fine. But in this new league, there's no kickoffs and there's no kicking the extra point. You have to go for two. I don't like that. Do you?
It didn't really bother me all that much. I guess it's funny, too, because I've been against that if they're ever going to change that in the NFL. But it didn't really bother me.
No, I mean, I like both. It might just be because I'm used to it. But kickoffs have become less of a part of a game, but I still like it. And the extra points?
It's still a part of the game. And the extra points come... How many times have you gotten porked because your guy missed an extra point?
Well, think of how much the strategy has changed in the last few years with all these extra points. You got coaches now in the second quarter, for crying out loud, deciding whether or not to go for two.
So I like that wrinkle with the extra point. I think they should move it back even a little bit more. 40-yard extra point, whatever, to make it more of a choice. But... To me, I would not want to eliminate kickoffs or extra points. On defense, you can't rush more than five. And there was a call last night for an illegal defensive formation that they never explained. Was that what that was?
Yeah, so this was one of the things I don't like. You can't rush safeties.
You can't
have exotic blitzes, stuff like that. It's just the five up front, which is like, what am I watching here? That part I didn't like.
Smart. I wouldn't want the NFL to do it, but for a new league with young, mediocre quarterbacks...
They don't want guys getting hurt.
No, they want their quarterbacks be able to figure it out. I don't think they care about guys getting hurt.
Because they definitely
don't. One of the signature plays from the weekend is this poor quarterback got his head taken off, literally, and there was no penalty. Have you seen this yet?
Yeah, no.
This might have been the hook in my mouth, because this is what I was like, oh, this is amazing. This was the San Diego and San Antonio game, and the San Diego quarterback got lit up.
Murray linked to it
next week.
It's in our email chain. Murray linked to it. They got his helmet goes flying. His head's amazing. It was unbelievable. He got freaking walloped. A clear headshot. Guy lowered his head, just took his freaking head off, and there was no flag. So I don't know how long that's going to last. But anyway, some of the other rules, there's no onside kicks. Instead of an onside kick, what they do is they give you the ball at your 28 and give you a 4th and 12. So 4th and 12, because I think they ran the numbers and said this is converted, you know, whatever, 30% of the time where onside kicks are converted 30% of the time. So they put it at your 28 and give you a 4th and 12.
We almost got that in that San Diego San Antonio game, but there was a bad interception late because it felt like it was going that way because San Diego was about to score.
Okay, so overtime, each team gets a first and goal at the 10, and that's it. And if it's still tied, then it's tied, and that's it, which I hate.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. I don't like that.
I want both teams to get a crack, but I want them to have to go up and down the field, not starting at the 10. So there's some things I like. There's some things I don't. Here's what I know, and this has been pointed out. Did you know that this Fakakta thing, which a lot of people didn't even know was happening, and it's not really it's not an independent league. It's sort of a subsidiary of the NFL, and I don't know if the NFL has any ownership in it, but basically any AAF contract can be broken to join the NFL. Okay, so if you have they all signed the exact same contract. Every player in the AAF signed a 3-year, $250,000 deal. So everyone makes the exact same amount. They sign the exact same deal, and if they get an NFL job or an NFL tryout, they're allowed to break the contract to go try out in the NFL.
It's like being in the taxi squad.
So this is in somehow conjunction with the NFL in some way, shape, or form. But it outdrew the NBA on ABC by just a little bit. They drew 2.9 million viewers, and ABC drew 2.5. I saw that graphic on the midday show on NBC Sports Boston on the simulcast. It outdrew it by just a skosh. And it was a good game. It was Oklahoma City-Houston, right?
Yep. Real star power there.
And this Fakakta football thing outdrew it, which this is my thing. This is my rant. I was a huge USFL fan when I was a kid. And don't ask me why, but I freaking love the thing. And this just proves to me a spring football league would work, like a real spring football league. It would work. The appetite's there. The appetite is there for it. And I'm not telling you, and the USFL got stupid because they tried to take on the NFL. So I'm not telling you that the spring football would ever rival the NFL. But could it chip away at some of their business and be a viable league that could make some money and we would have something in the spring? Absolutely. People are willing to watch this Fakakta thing, which has nobody's. The USFL, do you remember the USFL?
Oh, sure. The players were good.
Jim Kelly, Reggie White, Steve Young, Herschel Walker, Bobby Abe, Anthony Carter, Trumaine Johnson, Craig James, Kelvin Bryant, Sam Mills.
Reggie White played in the USFL?
Yeah. Hell yes. He was a stud. Memphis Showboats. Yes. You had Hall of Famers. Like, even the USFL, I was just going refreshing my memory on all this today. They even had good offensive linemen. Remember Gary Zimmerman?
Sure.
Made the effing Hall of Fame. He's an offensive lineman for the LA Express, I think. Irv Eatman, Nate Newton was an offensive lineman in the USFL. And then even guys that were sort of borderline NFL players but were worthwhile, were pros. Brian Sipe, Doug Williams were quarterbacks. For all you running back people, they had a ton of great running backs.
Right. Kelvin Bryant.
Gary Anderson, Kelvin Bryant I just mentioned. Joe Cribbs. They had players.
Herschel,
yes, I mentioned him as well.
Oh, sorry. It's
okay. They
twice.
No, the whole list. It's just the whole Houston Gamblers team. The whole Houston Gamblers team. The receiver, Ricky Sanders, Richard Johnson, Gerald McNeil, Clarence Verdan. They all went to the NFL. So you had real players in that league. Now they spent too much money, but I think it would work if they were just smarter about it. If they didn't try and take on the NFL. If they didn't try and go to the fall. If they just kept some of those stars, but not all of them. Like, I think there's a whole place for another league of these tweener college guys that don't work in the pros, but people still want to watch. Doug Flutie played in that league. You had, they were filthy with running backs. Marcus Dupree, Mike Rozier, okay? There's a place for those guys.
That's why I think the product for this AAF thing could be better if you're able to poach somehow from CFL. You get to dabble, you know, in the college ranks, maybe draft some of these players as well. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to do it because that they're in bed with the NFL already, that they were airing that game last night. On the one hand, I was like, okay, it's kind of cool. But on the other hand, it's like, well, how much is this really going to grow? Because it proves the NFL certainly is never going to be afraid of this. They have their hand in it somehow, allowing these players to break their contract to join it in case they actually make that kind of jump.
So, I want a real spring league.
Yeah, me too.
A real spring.
That's why I don't think this thing is going to be all that great going forward.
I want the USFL to come back, which is, you know, a dozen real NFL caliber players spread across the league. And then you can fill rosters with, sort like, I'm sorry, Tim Tebow would be a perfect USFL kind of player, like Doug Flutie was. Not NFL caliber, but fans still want to watch.
Johnny Manziel.
Perfect. Perfect. And there's, you know, like, I don't follow college football, but there's a million guys like that, not just the quarterbacks. You know, for all you running back people, shove all the running backs in the spring league. The USFL, the old USFL, was filthy with really good running backs. So, like, all these sort of tweener college players. You know, you put Tim Tebow on the Jacksonville team. You don't think that you could...
Oh, that's a draw.
Oh, my God. You put Johnny Manziel in the San Antonio team or the Texas team and have a real spring... People would watch it. People would watch it. I would love it. Oh, my God. I used to love the USFL. I love that thing.
So this will be entertaining for a bit. But like I said, I just think it's going to end up maxing out. You know, like the XFL, when that starts next year, okay, they're going to be able to sign guys early. Maybe they'll be able to figure it out this time around and compete and get big name players and actually have a real spring league. Because, you know, this was nice for this weekend. I think the numbers are going to have to come down because obviously they're going to draw it being the first weekend. But I don't know. I don't know how sustainable the whole thing is going to end up being.
But just quickly, the running back. But finally, the one thing that did stand out was watching the game last night. I'm like, oh, there's Sony Michel. Like, I saw a bunch of running backs in this game last night. Like, that's where you should go get your running backs from the AAF, making $285,000 a year or whatever it is. That should be your running back.
Well, he'd be the MVP of that league.
That should, well, but I'm just telling you, like, that's where the running back should come from the AAF, because there's no discernible difference between those guys and half the guys you see on Sundays in the NFL.
Did you mention Steve Young?
No.
Yeah, so, just quickly.
How about Jim Kelly?
Go ahead.
From an aesthetic value, did you like the uniforms?
Sure, yeah, of course. New uniforms are always fun. New uniforms and team names and like all that stuff. I'm into it. But I want a real. This isn't a real league. This is like the D league.
Right.
This is like a minor league. I want a real pro league that does some of what the USFL did back in the early 80s, but certainly not all of it. And just it would work. I think half the USFL worked. It worked. There were a few profitable franchises, and if they just kept their heads, that thing would have been okay. I would love to see that. There's one thing that we saw last night that I would also love that I don't think is going to work at the NFL level. We'll talk about that right after this.
Filger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
So quickly, one of the things we have talked a lot about with Replay is this rugby model that our buddy Mike and Woburn keeps telling us about, where there's an open mic between the replay official and the official on the field, and they broadcast it. So you can tell what the ref and the replay official are talking about. They do it in real time, and it's broadcast during these rugby telecasts, and it's a really great feature to rugby, apparently. I've never seen it. I've heard about it. So this AAF apparently has done something like it, where they have a replay official upstairs. In this case, it's a she. She's mic'd up, and it's on live TV, and there was a play last night in the Atlanta-Orlando game that was a touchdown that was ruled incomplete on the field, and she's going over it, and they broadcast it live. And on paper, it sounds like a great idea. And, you know, Jimmy included this tweet, and it's whoever tweeted this out, says the AAA replay official changes her mind during the process of the review. This level of transparency is outstanding. A must add for the NFL, says this tweeter. I'm going to play it for you, and you tell me if this is going to work in the NFL. Go.
Terry Valenti, the replay
official. He's rolling on the ground. He's using the ground to keep it in there. The ground helps him. We're going to let it stand.
So she's going to agree with the call on the field. No touchdown.
And she's going through replays.
She feels that the
She's toggling back and forth with the replays as she's doing this. And you're seeing it in real time as she's sort of toggling back and forth. Continue.
No touchdown. She feels that the ground helped the catch at the end of the catch.
Definitely touched. With ball is down on the ground sliding. Okay, we're going to let... Wait a minute, 1 second.
Now she's looking at a different replay. Now she's like, oh, wait a minute. So now she saw a different angle that showed, oh, no, maybe he caught it. Continue.
Wait a minute, 1 second. We've got an elbow down. It's got it and touched. Nope, we're going to overturn and reverse this to a catch in the end zone for a score by Orlando. Okay. He's got possession. He tucks it in. His elbow hits. The ball is in control in his arms. Okay. We've got a score.
Okay, so that all is in real time. How'd you feel about it?
I loved it. If nothing else, I think it makes really good television. You know, we've never had anything like this before, and in football, obviously, Mike has mentioned that they have it in rugby, but I was wowed by it. I really was. I would love to see it in the NFL. I'm not going to be surprised if they never...
You babies couldn't handle it.
Oh, they totally couldn't, but go ahead. I have a different issue with it, but go ahead.
You children couldn't handle it. You couldn't handle this. You can't handle the truth, or you can't handle someone actually just talking out the decision in real time and changing their mind. Never mind her mind, what you would do to this poor gal. If this call went against the Patriots... and I'm not talking to the fans. I know about the baby media that's right along with it. I mean, what would you do to this poor girl?
Wait a minute, 1 second. Elbow down.
Wait a minute. You'd pull the sound. You'd edit it. You'd make her, and then you'd claim that the league was out to get you. Now, even though it'd be as transparent as possible, you couldn't handle this. There's no way you could handle this.
So look, that part I agree with. Do you think this thing was 100% transparent? Do you have any doubts about someone chirping in her ear while this is going on?
Maybe
I do. Like, she changes her mind that fast? Like, just...
Well, so that's the complaining that I would think we would hear at the NFL level.
Who's in her ear?
Right.
Oh, listen to this dummy. She changes her mind right in the middle of it. Oh, what do you have, Goodell in your ear? Blah. Oh, you couldn't handle it. You couldn't handle it.
Well, so I do wonder about that, though, in this particular case. Like, she pulls a reversal pretty fast here.
Well, because...
Maybe it was a dramatization because it's the first time everyone's seeing it, blah, blah, blah.
No, she was looking at one angle that made it look like this, and then she started to get a different feed that showed a different angle, and she goes, well, wait a minute.
Yeah, I still question...
Wait a minute, 1 second. We've got an elbow down. It's got it and touch. Nope, we're going to overturn this and reverse this to a catch in the end zone for a score by Orlando.
Yo, you think that was a fake?
I don't know.
So the whole thing that gets my antenna...
I'm telling you, I have my doubts.
So the whole thing that gets my... is that it is a woman. And not that, you know, women wouldn't be capable of this, or, you know, that's... I'm not making that. It's sort of like... feels like there's a little something being force-fed on me there. You know, they're trying to prove this point. They had female officials on the field, too, not just, like, side judges. Wasn't one of the... Was it... I thought I saw a female ref last night, like, setting the ball, like, right in the middle of it. And I feel like, are they going out of their way on this one? To prove some sort of point here, like some sort of political point. It's like, you know, there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that that sort of bugs me. So I don't know, was it contrived or not? But her analysis followed the video.
Sure.
You know, when the video looked this thing, she said this. And when the video looked like something else, she changed her mind.
Yeah, and look, I get it. You know, the whole idea is to have her think out loud, right? So I get it. I don't know. It just felt, I don't know. It felt staged. It felt staged to me. And so...
I saw it in one of the other games, too. I think it was actually the...
So you saw more of it than I did, Murray. So go ahead.
Well, it was a different person. It was kind of a portly fellow doing it in the other game that I watched on Saturday night. But same thing. He's talking it through, and they're showing you the video in real time. I didn't think it was fake.
On paper, I think it's fabulous. Because I could handle it if the person changed their mind in midstream. Because that's the whole thing. You look at it, and you sort of... They want you to talk out loud so you can hear their thought process. And you see one replay, it looks like this. And you see another, it looks like that. And because I'm an adult, I can just handle it if a call goes against me. But most football fans, I'll forget about it.
Lose their minds.
Football fans can't handle it. It's turned to baby nation when it comes to these football fans.
I was just happy it wasn't the ref standing around and you waiting, you know, or like, now it's time for my bathroom break because I'm not going to get anything here.
Absolutely should do it. There's no way. There is no way. There is no way they'll ever do it. No chance. But it was a nice little wrinkle. I'll just go back. I just wish someone would do spring football for real and not this. Because I do think it would work. Your thoughts on everything, I promise, on a Reentry Monday right after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.